tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 8th of June 2026 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, last week we finally had a new episode of Patriotic History, the first one for 3 years with my new co-host, Jeff Roberts from ArmReg. He's the guy that publishes Gomar Rudolph's books. I hope people managed to find that on the website. We'll have another episode of that in 2 weeks' time. This Friday, we've got a new episode of Thought Criminals with myself and Sam Melia. So we have two new series there, or one old series that's being continued. So we continue to find new content to put on the Radio Albion site. And of course, we do have the live stream, which is going 24 hours a day. And there's 6 hours worth of content on there every day. As well as having Radio Albion content, we also put Dr. Patrick Slattery on there. And if we have space, we also sometimes have a bit of Jared Taylor, whatever they've got going on at Amren, and also Dr. E. Michael Jones at Culture Wars. That's as well as the Radio Albion content. So you could just tune in to the Radio Albion stream and listen to it for 6 hours a day, and you'd get all the latest content on there. Which I know people used to do when they were driving lorries and while people are working, things like that. They don't want to be messing around downloading stuff and pressing play on a player. You can just leave the radio stream going for the whole amount of time. I would like to get an app made up so that we can get Radio Albion just with a click of a button on people's television and on their smartphones. That's the next project that I will be working on. We also have the Patriotic Alternative Family Festival. That's the summer camp, which takes place in the north of England. We've got that coming up on July the 3rd to the 5th. And I'll be putting an advert for that in the sidebar later on today. So if anybody wants to come along to the family festival, the Patriotic Alternative Summer Camp, just click the link in the advert and that will take you to where you can find the details of that. And there will be live music this year, as well as there's a long hike that goes on the Saturdays, all sorts of things that are being planned for it. It should be bigger and better than ever before, and it will be the first summer camp that I've been able to go to since I was released from prison. So I am particularly looking forward to that. Now, to get into the news today, I have some more news on the Henry Novak killing. More information is now coming out. We've seen this Digvar, the Sikh, we've seen him attacking people with knives in a public display, a mock attack of weapons usage in the public with him using knives. We've seen him trying to start a fight when he's been stopped in a car and somebody has to put him away in the car and prevent him from trying to start a fight. And we've also seen over the weekend that the police were called because he was using firearms in his garden. And there's footage of him shooting a gun in his back garden, and the police did nothing about it. Now, we have also now been told that the police tried to cover up what he did. And I'm actually taking this from GB News, but it's all over the mainstream sources. There's also Breitbart. There's also The Mail, also The Daily Telegraph. They're all carrying this news story. The headline is, "Police tried to smear Henry Novak as aggressor just 3 days after his murder." They knew he'd been murdered at this point. Police also risked collapsing the trial by trying to put out a statement about disinformation while proceedings were ongoing. Hampshire police tried to portray Henry Novak as the aggressor against Vikram Digwar just 3 days after he was murdered. In a bombshell revelation last night, it emerged the force tried to put out a statement implying that Mr. Novak had assaulted both Digwar and his brother. An initial police statement, according to the Sunday Times, read, "It was reported two men had been assaulted by an unknown man." So at this time, they knew that he'd been murdered. And they knew that there was no evidence that he had assaulted the person, no evidence of this racial attack that supposedly occurred. And yet they were going to report that in the press, that two men had been assaulted by this unknown man, which was, of course, Henry Novak's. In fact, the vile murderer had stabbed him with an 8-inch Sikh ceremonial knife before falsely claiming the student had racially abused him. And we also shouldn't forget that when this did all come out and the police did make an apology, they even obfuscated things in the apology. They said, "Oh, we didn't know that he had been stabbed. We were only told that it was a racist attack." Well, as soon as they got on the scene, they were told that he had been stabbed. They were told he had been stabbed by the person that was stabbed, by the victim. Plus, there were people around there as well. There was a woman that was saying that he had been stabbed. So the police were told that he was stabbed, but they chose not to listen to him. What they did, they prioritised the allegation of racism over the allegation of being stabbed. That is what is at fault here. And the police are being investigated for this. This is why they're being investigated as witnesses. They're not being investigated as accessories to murder. The inquest is only going to look at whether he could have lived, possibly have lived, if he had got help straight away. They're not actually going to look at the police's actions. And I believe the reason for that is because the police's actions are in line with their guidance, that they have to treat people differently if they're ethnic minorities, and that an allegation of racism is the most serious thing that there can possibly be. I mean, I saw a quote the other day, or a tweet the other day, and it was saying that an allegation of racism is the only thing that you can lose your job for in the civil service now. So you can see that people would be fearful of allegations of racism. If you're a police officer and there's an allegation of racism, you can lose your job. You can be suspended without pay, you could be pilloried, you can be attacked by the public. So you can understand why they would not want to be seen as being racist, effectively. But this is actually the guidance that has gone out from the College of Policing, which we've been saying for a long time here at Radio Albion, has been politically captured by the left. Police had sufficient evidence by that time, that's the time that they put this statement out, to know that Digwar was a liar. The force would later change their wording after outrage from the Novak family. So they would have got away with this, putting out this false statement that two men had been attacked by a racist, effectively, and they would have put that out if it hadn't been for Henry Novak's family kicking up a fuss about this. The Novaks had become concerned a false narrative was being pushed about their son. And this false narrative was even there in the court. The Digwar family, they were accusing the judge of being racist, and the Sikh community were talking about racism. And in actual fact, after the verdict, when Digwar was found guilty, on the mainstream media, they were reading out a statement from the Sikh community as if this statement had come out after the conviction. It hadn't. The statement came out at the time when this information came out. It came out a week or two before the actual conviction, and it was calling it a moment of madness. So there was no there was no allegation that Digwar wasn't of sound mind, that this was a moment of madness. This was a predetermined attempt to murder somebody. And the Sikh communities, when they talk about this, they're sort of more concerned about them being tarred with the same brush, effectively. And they just say that it's a moment of madness, rather than utterly condemning this. And they didn't say anything after the conviction. This was put out at the time as damage limitation, I believe. I mean, it's similar to when Henry Novak's father spoke on the steps of the court. Now, everybody was saying that's incredibly brave of him, but it was actually Henry Novak's stepfather. It wasn't his, he wasn't related by blood, which is probably why he was more able to keep his composure and speak about this. I'm not running him down as being the stepfather there. I'm sure he's a very good stepfather. I'm just saying that because he wasn't actually related, it may have been slightly easier for him to deal with the press. When you see the other members of the family there are unable to speak, and normally it's a legal representative that they have that speak on the steps. And he was saying, we don't want people to sow division over this. And of course, that's a term that the general public wouldn't use. It's a term that the mainstream media use and that the politicians use, sowing division or spreading hate. Nobody normal uses terminology like that. Most of them don't even understand what it means. They certainly wouldn't think that protesting about this two-tier justice system and trying to put a stop to it, they certainly wouldn't see that as sowing division or sowing hate, spreading hate. They would see that as trying to prevent the same thing from happening again, because clearly that's what it is. That's what these protests are about. It's about trying to prevent the same thing from happening again. It's not about hate. Getting back to this article here, police are said to have told the Novaks their next update, which would include a family tribute, would again infer that young Henry was the initial aggressor. So for the second time, they did this and tried to portray their son as a racist. Officers dropped that section of the statement, which only referred to an altercation when published. So they said there had been an altercation between two men and an unnamed person. So this means that this Digvar's brother was there as well, and he was the one that was calling the police and saying, oh, this was a racist attack, my brother's had his turban knocked off, or whatever it was he said. In which case he should also be charged as an accessory to murder, the same as his mother has. I mean, the whole family tried to cover this up. They should all be prosecuted for that. In actual fact, when somebody makes an accusation of racism, saying that something is racially aggravated, if it's found that it was not racially aggravated, then that person that made that accusation should then be punished as if they were the guilty party and had carried out the same racially aggravated attack. So, for instance, if in this instance here where he said, oh, it was a racial attack, but in actual fact somebody else had been stabbed, the person that made the allegation of it being a racial attack, they should be charged as if they had carried out the racist attack in whatever instance it was. I think then we might see a little less of people saying this. And the fact that he came out with this idea of, oh, we'll just say that it was a racism and that means that you'll get off, or that means that you'll get less of a punishment. This just shows how prevalent that way of thinking must be. And you wonder how many miscarriage of justice there have been, apart from this one, where there have been allegations of racism made when there actually was no racism. As it effectively means that we have two different types of people in our country. We have those who can be prosecuted and given like a third extra sentence for racially aggravated, and we have those people who do a third or less of a sentence because it's not possible for them to be racist. So we certainly have two classes of people in Britain now. We have a protected class with protected characteristics, and we have an unprotected class with unprotected characteristics, which is effectively straight white men. The Sunday Times also revealed that Hampshire police risked collapsing Digwell's trial by trying to issue a statement over so-called disinformation while proceedings were already underway. Well, the only people trying to put out disinformation here are the Hampshire police, aren't they? Trying to make out that this was a racist attack when they knew that it wasn't, that the person had been murdered. That's the disinformation. The statement is understood to have contained information about how a court case works, reminding people that nothing could be published that could prejudice legal proceedings, and said that police would answer questions once the trial was complete. But the force was then scolded by the Crown Prosecution Service that any intervention could jeopardise the case. And I think they wanted to actually put some evidence in there that the people in the court hadn't even heard. So they literally risked collapsing the case in their attempt to portray Henry, the victim, as a racist. It is understood that police had concerns about online commentary and potential public disorder. Well, once again, the online commentary and the potential public disorder is because of the falsehoods that people are being told. It's the same with the unrest that happened after the Southport murders, when the general public were told that it was a Welsh choir boy that had carried this out, and in actual fact, it was someone of migrant heritage. His parents were Rwandan. It wasn't a Welsh choir boy. And there was a link to Islam as well. He was found with rice in, and he was found with jihadi materials, which wasn't released for another 6 months. So the disinformation in that case was being put out by the state, by the mainstream media, and the disinformation in this case was being put out by the police. And yet they have the gall to then say, oh, well, we need to intervene here to prevent disinformation. What they mean by disinformation is the truth, that this young lad did not have a racist bone in his body, and he was murdered because of some altercation that he had with this Sikh. As I mentioned in the first instance, I think what probably happened was that he was walking along using his mobile phone, possibly bumped into the Sikh. The Sikh then took that as an offence to his honour, and then grabbed the phone off of Henry. Henry may have tried to then get the phone back, and then I think the Sikh must have stabbed him. I think something along those lines is what actually happened. Yet the police have continued to try and cover this up and pretend that it was a racist attack that sparked all of this off. The Crown Prosecution Service told the police force it could risk impacting the integrity of the case against Vikram Digwal. So that's if the police intervened any more to put out any more information and ask people to stop putting out disinformation. I guess if you're going to stop people putting out disinformation, you have to put out what you say is the correct information. And of course, that would have affected the trial, wouldn't it? It would have affected the jury. Like, the trial would have collapsed if the police had got their way. It also came to light last night that the force, already under fire for its diversity schemes, failed to take a knife from Digwa after he was arrested and did not handcuff him when he was arrested. I mean, this is what the stepfather pointed out after the trial, that this Digwa was actually allowed to just walk into his house and collect whatever food that he wanted. He wasn't even put in handcuffs, and then he was taken to the police station to answer questions, and they didn't even take his dagger from him. Not the dagger that he did the murdering with. And of course, he was covered in blood as well when he gave the knife to his mother to hide. Not that knife, but another knife that he had hanging around his neck. The blade was only removed after a police search before he was moved into a cell, the Sun revealed. So the whole time he was answering questions after being arrested, he still had this knife. A source said either the arresting officers knew he had the kirpan on and let him keep it on after his arrest, or they missed it and it was only picked up when he was searched at the police station. Well, I think, bearing in mind all the other exceptions that have been made for this murderer, I think they probably knew that he had this kirpan on, but they didn't want to search him, didn't want to be accused of racism. Either way, it was a massive blunder and it could have been dangerous. So, thankfully, it didn't turn out to be dangerous. A CPS spokesman has now said the CPS highlighted to the police that protecting the integrity of the ongoing trial was essential, and of the risks of referring to any aspect of the evidence before it had been heard by the court and the case would be summed up by the judge to the jury. So this implies that the police were wanting to put out a statement including things that the jury had not even heard yet, as I say, which would have collapsed the trial. However, it was made clear that whether a statement was released was ultimately a police operational decision. A spokeswoman for Hampshire Police said following the opening of the trial and the media reporting that followed, a significant amount of mis- and disinformation was circulating online. This included requests for information to be shared that had not been fully examined as part of the murder trial. Well, how can that be misinformation or disinformation to be asking for more information about this? I think people were wanting to know who the police were that did this. People were wanting to see the footage so that we could make our own minds up about this. I mean, that really, really shocking footage, seeing somebody dying there, saying, "I can't breathe," and saying, "I've been stabbed," and the police saying, "I don't think you have, mate. You know, there's a trail of blood there. He must have been covered in blood from this." And yet they say, "Oh, I don't think you have been, mate." The intention of the statement was to remind the public that there were ongoing legal proceedings and that the law is clear that nothing could be published which could prejudice the trial. The decision not to publish was taken following advice from the CPS. Yes, and bear in mind that the other two things that they published, or that they were going to publish, the only reason they were stopped is because the family were furious at what they were about to publish, trying to imply that Henry had racially attacked these people. What they knew was a false allegation. The police were putting that out, deliberately putting that out, to cover up the fact that this was an innocent man. Now, I've got some extra information on this that comes from Breitbart. They say the CPS highlighted to the police that protecting the integrity of the ongoing trial was essential, and of the risks of referring to any aspect of the evidence before it had been heard by the court and the case had been summed up by the judge to the jury, the prosecution service said. However, it was made clear that whether a statement was released was ultimately a police operational decision. It comes as the political establishment in London is seeking to use the case to push for more censorship powers to combat so-called misinformation. But as I pointed out, the misinformation was coming from the police. It wasn't coming from anybody else. Technology Secretary Liz Kendall said in the wake of the riots in Southampton, well, they weren't very big riots, were they? I mean, I've seen some footage of the police being very, very violent with people. And I think that was the reason why the public got so angry at the police, is because of the way that they were being treated. They were like being bashed over the head with riot shields and having a load of coppers all laying the boot in and punching you just because you're not moving very fast off the wall that you were sitting on. I mean, I've seen that happen. Then, of course, you've seen somebody pushing a dumpster that's been set on fire at the police. Of course, condone that. It shouldn't be acting in any violent way or breaking any laws, effectively, when you're going to a protest. But when you've got people that aren't really political, they aren't used to doing this, and they see that the police are violently attacking innocent people, it's liable to get people angry at the police and want to fight back effectively, which I think is what went on. And again, the misinformation here is that the public were being told that Henry was a racist, and we were being told that he wouldn't have lived even if the police had called the emergency services. Well, there's a Polish paediatrician, a medical expert, who has viewed the evidence that we've been given so far, and he says that he would have survived had he been given medical care. And the reason why he died is because he was handcuffed, and they put his hands behind his back, which tore open the wound. And it's horrendous what has happened here. Technology Secretary Liz Kendall said in the wake of the riots in Southampton, following the release of body cam footage of Novak's death, that she was very concerned about social media amplifying false narratives during times of unrest. What false narrative was being amplified? Or what was being amplified was the footage, the body cam footage. And that's what people were asking for. The people were asking for the evidence so that there couldn't be any danger of any false narratives being pushed. And I think that's the reason why they eventually cracked and they did show the body cam footage. And they had to get permission from the Novak family first in order to do that. So the false narrative, the way you stop a false narrative is you provide the evidence so that people can make their own minds up. And then there isn't a false narrative, is there? And anybody that tries to push a false narrative is going to look rather stupid, aren't they, if the actual evidence has been shown to the public. She said, "I definitely think, particularly during moments of crisis and disorder and when public safety is important, we need to look at what more we can do, she said, per The Guardian. She cited a report from the Science, Innovation and Technology Committee of the House of Commons, which found that misleading and hateful messaging proliferated rapidly online, amplified by the recommendation algorithms of social media companies, during the aftermath of the Southport mass stabbing, which left three young girls dead at a Taylor Swift dance party in 2024. Again, the reason why that happened is because the mainstream media and the state put out false information. They claimed that it was a Welsh choir boy that carried out this massacre. And it wasn't. It was a son of a Rwandan immigrant, a man of migrant background, of Rwandan ethnicity. And they tried to pretend that he was of Welsh ethnicity. And they said it was nothing to do with Islam. And it turned out it was to do with Islam six months later. And if they'd actually said the name of the person who it was that had carried this out, I don't think that this idea that it was anything to do with Islam would have got out, would it? I mean, if they said it was Axel Rudakabana, I mean, it's not a name that is really linked with Islam, is it? And if they said, well, he was Rwandan, then people wouldn't have thought that it was anything to do with Islam, would they? But it's the state and the mainstream media not coming clean about these things and showing us the evidence and speaking to us truthfully. While supposed misinformation was blamed for the riots that ensued, the initial government narrative that the killer was merely a teenager from Wales proved to be lacking. It was later revealed that the killer, Axel Rudakabana, had immigrated to the country from Rwanda and that he had engaged with Islamist terror material before the mass stabbing. Again, they're not quite correct there. It wasn't Axel Rudakabana that immigrated to the country from Rwanda. I believe it was his parents that emigrated to Rwanda. I don't know whether he was born in Britain. I mean, it really doesn't matter whether he was born in Britain or not. He's of Rwandan ethnicity. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're born in a barn or not. It doesn't make your horse, does it? Where you're born has no relevance whatsoever to what sort of person that you are. I mean, it's just the environment in which you were born. What matters is who it is that's giving birth to you and who all your ancestors were. That's what actually makes a person up. They are the sum of all their ancestors. That's what is important, ancestry, not where it is that you're actually born. I mean, we had an instance with David Lammy trying to claim that this Digwa was a Brit. That's the exact word that he used. Well, no, he's not. He's a Sikh. He's of Indian heritage. He might have a bit of paper that says he's a British citizen, but that doesn't make him a Brit, does it? It makes him a Sikh with a British passport. David Lammy doesn't seem to understand the difference between citizenship and ethnicity, which is a shame, really, because he's quite an intelligent man. And you can have a conversation with him. He's quite friendly with J.D. Vance, apparently. Perhaps we might have a look some more at David Lammy's comments later on in the week. Well, regardless, Kendall said the government is looking at not only boosting trusted sources of information, which I think is extremely important, and there's probably more we could do there, but also, you know, enabling people to reset their algorithm. So think about what they're saying they're going to do there. You know, originally the internet used to be democratic, and I've mentioned this quite a few times. It used to be democratic. Whatever was the most popular, whatever had been clicked the most times, made it to the top of the search engine results. So that was democracy, if you look at those clicks as if they were votes. The person that gets the most votes wins. The article that gets the most clicks gets to the top of the search ranking. So it was democratic. Then they broke the internet and they took certain subjects out from being the most sought after information. In some cases, they put them two or three pages back. And instead of getting the most popular information at the top, you got the information that the state wanted you to see. So they are already doing that. But that's what she's talking about doing there, boosting trusted sources of information. What would have gone on there in the Southport case, they would have boosted this information that it was a Welsh choir boy then, because they were the, it was the trusted sources that were saying that. It was the Sky and the BBC. And the people that were actual eyewitnesses there and that knew what had gone on, their information would not have got out at all. So, I mean, this policy here of boosting trusted sources of information, that would not have stopped the disinformation after the Southport riots. That would have amplified the disinformation. And in the same instance here, if they had boosted what the police said about there being an altercation between two men and an attacker, somebody that attacked these two men, again, that would have been the disinformation that was being boosted, not the truth. I just wish we could go back to having a democratic internet. How about that? That whatever is the most popular gets to the top of the search rankings. And that's it. That's equality, isn't it? I think that's what Elon Musk would rather have. But of course, he can't do that because you have all these special interest groups that interfere. I mean, even my X account is throttled and I'm shadow banned. If you click on my page, you can't even see my posts unless you've actually signed up to follow me. So even though X is supposed to be a bastion of free speech now, they still shadow ban people. Patriotic Alternative are still not able to have a public page on there. And yet you have people in the Houses of Parliament that are saying that that's not good enough and we need to be banning more of this stuff and boosting more of what we say. Well, I just think the more they do that and the more they don't allow people like eyewitnesses to put their information out there, that the people are going to trust the government even less, aren't they, when they see that what's being boosted is actually false information, but it's coming from a verified source. I even hope not hate. They're supposed to be a verified source that come out with truthful information, and yet they gave the press a load of false information about me being a person called Stephen Stone, didn't they? So these verified sources can't be trusted in a lot of cases. You can't say that anybody is 100% going to have access to the truth. What they should just do is have a democratic internet where what people want to see, it gets picked up on the algorithms from what they've looked at, and people's search results are based on what are the most popular search results. Democracy, democratic internet. How about that for an idea? Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.